Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a difference in the world. And we're going to explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, spiritual, physical, mental, relationships, disabilities, and many more interesting topics. Our broadcast team so far consists of outstanding people both from Canada and the U.S., including several Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructors and authors. My name is Tom Tutall Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor, also a regular contributor to their weekly e-zine. And I recently spoke at the 2012 Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who is the keynote speaker for that event. I also spoke recently again in Malaysia in Kuala Lumpur on September 1st to 1,750 million-dollar roundtable life insurance agents. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced and been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1". That's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. That being said, I always answer amazing when asked how I am doing. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication, and we're the official and only media partner with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about me at my website. It's Tom, the number 2, and Tall, TALL.com. My guest today is Brad Callender, and Brad was born in Kitchener, Ontario. That's about an hour from Toronto, where I live. He has been married to his lovely wife and his best friend of all time, Chris, who gifted him with 2 beautiful kids, Josh, who's 12, and Holly, who's 7. Since then, he has asked many, many masters and became very good at a variety of occupations, from sales to private investigator, certified structural steel fitter and welder, and now full-time real estate investor. He and his wife began their financial education transformation in 2006 with The Secret, and then have been moving forward, reading many books and attending many seminars. In early 2011, he read Think and Grow Rich, and it was then that he realized he had been unwittingly using some of Napoleon Hill's principles all along. He's been studying under Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Education since May of 2011, and he has accumulated almost $750,000 of positive cash flow investment properties. In February of this year, he retired from welding and working for others forever. And Chris and his wife are full-time learners and entrepreneurs, working with and helping other like-minded people. Welcome to the show today, Brad.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm amazing, as always.
I was just checking to see if that's what you're going to say.
And as I mentioned before this show, I started many years ago my entrepreneurial ventures. I took a Raymond Aron real estate investing course,
yes.
And that's where I met my friend Shane Moran, the co-founder of Organo Gold,
mm-hmm.
And he was the one who got me to read Think and Grow Rich.
Yes.
And so I know a lot of the intricacies of real estate investing and some of the challenges.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There are quite a few.
Yes, and so this is hopefully today you'll be able to help potential and even current real estate investors with some of those ideas that can help them avoid some of those pitfalls, because as you know, it's an amazing entrepreneurial venture to be into real estate if you do it properly.
Well, absolutely, Tom, and you know, I'd be happy to share whatever I can with all the world.
Now, in the bio there, I just read that you read Think and Grow Rich in early 2011. Was there someone specifically who recommended that book to you?
Well, yes. Actually, Tom, it was a friend of mine, and I think I can safely mention his name, is John McKinley. And John and I have been longtime friends, and actually he was my guitar teacher. And John has been into all this sort of, you know, network marketing and all that sort of stuff for quite some time. And what he did is one day he came over to my house and we were talking. You know, I was talking about, you know, sales and all that other sort of thing. And then he brought with him Think and Grow Rich. And he just put it in my hand and he just said, you know, Brad, I think this is something that you need to read. And so I went, I looked at it, and I looked at him, and I said, you know what, John, I'm going to read this. And so I did. I just started reading it. I was going, oh, my goodness, this stuff is awesome. You know, just the way Napoleon Hill comes across, you know, in his writings. And it was just, I just sucked it all in. I'll just tell you that.
and in the bio it had mentioned, kind of like when I read it, that you'd realize that, hey, I've been using a lot of these principles already.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it goes right back to when I was a little fella, and my dad started working, selling newspapers. Actually, it was bingo cards. Back when I was 9 years old, and what he said to me was that what you got to do is when you want to do something well, you must go to a master and take what the master tells you and, you know, precisely execute everything, and it will work out in your favor.
And wow, then, you were 9 years old?
Yeah, I started, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I wanted to make money. I wanted to, you know, be able to buy those things that my friends had. You know, my parents weren't all that well off. And, you know, so you'd see, you know, kids going to the candy store. You know, they go to the toy store, and, you know, their parents would buy them stuff and whatnot. And I go, you know what? I want that too, and I'm going to get it. And so, you know, my dad came along and said, you know what? We have these bingo cards. It was the Lions Club Bingo, and it was on, I think it was just on the TV. And so I would take these cards, you know, and go around and sell them to all the neighbors. And but that's how it started. My dad took me door to door and showed me exactly how to do it.
And, wow.
And so then what happened was after that I said, you know, what's my big purpose in this? He said, well, learn it, and then you teach others. You teach others how to do it, so you pay it forward. And so it kind of went on from there. And every time that I wanted to do something, I would go to somebody that was really good at it and you know, ask them and to teach me, and then they did.
And wow.
It just kept going like that. You know, I've been, all sorts of things, Tom, you know, from sales to like I said, I was a private investigator at one time. And I've been a structural steel fitter, welder, you know. And there again, I went to a man who taught me how to weld really good. And you know, I asked, you know, I want to learn this because I want to be able to, you know, have something so that my family won't worry about money. You know, I have a trade or something, so I won't have to worry about getting work and all this stuff, eh? And then so he ended up teaching me, and I came out of his class with you know, four CWB welding certifications, which is you know, almost unheard of, going through that and getting all four at the same time. And I just, every class was you know, I just did it to the very best of my ability at all times. And I even walked out of that course with 100% mark on my you know, the secondary school graduation diploma.
Mm-hmm.
100% mark on that.
Whoa! And wow, what a blessing that your dad at 9 years old gave you probably the best advice that any father can give. And can you imagine if a lot of kids were taught this at 8, 9, and 10 years old, and
yeah,
had their dad teach them, go door to door, teaching them to sell? They would never have to worry about their kids being unemployed again if they teach them at 9 years old how to sell door to door.
Well, you know, Tom, you know, that's so true. you know, the whole thing is that our school system does not teach this stuff, period. It doesn't teach you the entrepreneurial spirit, if you will. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Like, what I've done with my own son is I have actually passed what my dad taught me down to him. And at like 5 years old, my son would come out and he would, you know, in the wintertime when, you know, blowing the snow and whatnot, and he'd say, geez, Dad, you know, can I blow the snow with you? And so I thought, you know what, for sure, absolutely. So I'd get him behind it, you know, and hold his hands while he's doing it and whatnot, and I taught him how to do it. And a couple of years later, he was 8 years old, and he had his own snow blowing route in the neighborhood here. Clearing people's driveways for, you know, $20 a piece. And
whoa.
And 1 year he made, I think it was probably somewhere $350 to $400 a month. Yeah.
And he's not even a teenager at that point.
No, he was only eight. So, you know, I mean, since then, he's gone ahead and he's, you know, he's been doing the snow blowing, but then he's already added in, he added in a newspaper route. And then he did that for about 8 or 9 months, and then he doubled the route. He wanted to make more money, right?
Wow.
And plus, he's got a dog walking business, too.
My goodness. I don't think he'll ever work for someone else.
I don't think so. And that was my thought in the very first place, because you know what? By the time he's 14 years old, he won't need to work at McDonald's. He'll have his own businesses already.
He'll own one.
Well, exactly. He owns three now.
Amazing. Now, my wife works for a criminal lawyer, and they use private investigators a lot. And
yeah.
So I've heard some funny stories about process serving and some of the ways they do it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ladies she has does it is a good-looking lady. She comes to the door with a pizza box and rings the doorbell, and when they answer, here's your pizza and your summons all at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have some funny stories or interesting stories from days when you did private investigating?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like for example, you know, there's been a couple of times, you know, where you get these guys, I can't work, and, you know, like business owners, and there's this one guy that lived out kind of in the country, and he was a woodworker. You know, he'd be making cabinets and whatnot. And I was a surveillance investigator, too, so, like, I'd be out in my van, you know, far off in the distance, you know, filming this stuff. And this guy was a cabinet maker, and so, you know, I can't work, all that sort of stuff. But then what I did is I followed him into this new subdivision. And, you know, him and his worker go into the house and whatnot. And then he comes back out, and he's got, like, you know, most part of a kitchen cabinet in his hand. And I'm filming all this, and I'm going, geez, you know, he looks like he can work pretty good, you know, and then he just walks right out and just throws, like, by himself, throws it right up on the truck, you know, gets up on the truck, and, you know, and I'm filming all this, and they don't know. So, it's a lot of stuff like that. Now, when it comes to the process serving, that gets to be, you know, some funny things. But one of our biggest secret weapons, you were talking about the nice-looking lady. Well, what we do is if we have one that's kind of going to be a difficult serve, let's say, my wife will just take our daughter, and they'll walk up to, you know, hand in hand up to the door and knock on the door. And you know, it's been lots of times, Tom, where there's been difficult serves, and we couldn't do it any other way. And, it's you know, it works perfect. You know,
exactly.
Our little girl at the door, and they're not thinking, oh, geez, this might be a process server. You know, they're probably thinking maybe it's just some neighborhood people that, you know, going door to door to say hi or something. You know, they have no idea.
Or sell Girl Guide cookies or something.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, my wife does most of the process serving because, you know, I do, but I'm also the commissioner for the company, too, so. Commissioning of the affidavits and whatnot like that, so I don't do too many of my own serves. But, you know, although I do them once in a while.
What an interesting little business that is, for sure.
Well, it is. And, you know, it's very simple. And it's just, and it's a lot, like my wife works a lot with, you know, overcoming fears and all that other sort of stuff, as well as I do, with the process serving, you know, and we do it without any type of judgment, too. That's very, very important, you know, because
yes,
people that are receiving this, you have no idea of their story, and you don't have any really idea of the story from the, you know, the creditor, other than these people owe the money.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
So,
that's,
you know,
an amazing point, too,
yeah.
Because you sometimes you wouldn't be able to help, but as you said, you don't know the story. You just know that your job is to deliver that, whatever it is, process.
Yeah, the
right.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know.
And wow, and now in your in the bios that people send me,
mm-hmm.
very few of them mention their best friend, their wife, and... men don't use those phrases, and yet, as you know, if you read enough of Napoleon Hill, when he talks about mastermind group, he always says that your spouse, if possible, should be your major mastermind member. The wife of Henry Ford and Thomas Edison were actually the most positive, encouraging mastermind members that those two had. And Napoleon Hill goes to great lengths to write that they wouldn't be where they are without their wife. So tell me about that mastermind relationship.
Well, you know, Tom, when I met Chris, I just absolutely knew that she was the one. We met at a friend's Christmas party, you know, and I really didn't know her a lot, all that well, but it was kind of funny because I used to make my own beer, and Chris doesn't even like beer, but she had decided to ask me, you know, about the beer I had made, you know, and she even had a sip just to kind of taste it, and from there I went, you know what, there's just, I like this girl. So, and then, so a couple of days later, we ended up going to a company Christmas party, and we've been together ever since. And I've just never met somebody like her ever. And you know what? I totally believe that God sends you the right one, and she just happened to be the right one. We just clicked so well together, you know. I mean, like every other couple, you know, you have your ups and downs and whatnot, you know, your little tips.
Yeah.
But we let that go. And, you know, we're all about forgiveness, because the whole thing is, if you hold that stuff in, then it just stews and brews and it goes nowhere. But once you let it out, it's gone. Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so we
exactly.
Just believe that, and we absolutely believe everything happens for a reason, too, the both of us. And so, you know, there's a reason we're together. And,
amazing.
You know, and the whole thing is, it's not our job to find find out how or why. It's just our job to enjoy it and be happy with it and run with it. So we do.
Amazing. And isn't it a sense of power and strength? And doesn't a man walk a little taller with his chest out a little bit when his wife is behind him and say, you can do it, go for it, I trust you, I know your judgment is good, versus one who's like, not another business idea, you can't do that, you're
exactly.
A welder.
Yeah, well, see, what we don't do is have negativity. We repel negativity, let's say. We just... Negativity is just that. It'll get you absolutely nowhere, right? Whether it be, and it all boils down to your attitude. It's
exactly.
Attitude. That's all it is. And if you can just simply change your mind just a little bit, you've found, and look at the positive side of things in life, you'll get along so much better. And
exactly.
So many more people, right? So,
exactly.
I mean, there's the negative ones, and they want to be alone and all that good stuff. Well, we say that's great. Go be alone. We don't need your negativity.
Need exactly.
You know?
Now, so many people know about Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. What an amazing series of books. But I hadn't heard of the Rich Dad Education. Is that a real estate investing specific program? Is it a mentoring and coaching thing? Tell me a little bit more about that.
Sure, no problem. It's a whole education system, like a complete financial education. And that covers everything from, you know, changing your mind to, you know, a rich person's, you know, attitude. And it goes all the way through all kinds of investing. So it doesn't matter if it's real estate investment you like, or it might be stock investment, it might be, you know, whatever kind of investment you like, they have that. You know, they'll teach you how to do it. They really focus on all aspects of real estate, though, because that's really where Robert Kiyosaki's strong points are. And they teach you everything. We've attended three of their courses so far, and they're really amazing, Tom, because they just take you kind of by the hand, and they tell you, do this, do this, do this, do this, and it will work. So up here in Canada, it's Tigrant Learning. That's the name of the company. But it's Robert Kiyosaki. It's his own company. It's just
right.
What they call it here. But yeah, Rich Dad Education is really big. And to any of the people listening, I would recommend that if you do get into any kind of investment, for sure, the very first thing you do is get educated on what you're about to embark on, because there's been so many people that have fallen flat on their face thinking they know how to invest, and they don't. You know, we see people with, you know, investing in properties all the time, and they think, you know, oh, I'll just put my money in there, and then it'll grow, and I don't have to do anything. Well, that's not true.
No.
And you will burn really bad if you're not careful. And
exactly.
What Kiyosaki teaches is to take calculated risks where you've gone through your due diligence and you've gone and done all that stuff that you need to do to check the place out. And, you know, you've got your lawyer, you've got your accountant, you've got all your power team. Very, very, very important. You know, it can't be stressed enough that you cannot do everything yourself. That's
exactly.
The mastermind in the very first place, right?
Exactly. Now, you had forgot to mention, I would think that in real estate, what I didn't have, you need a property inspection person you can trust. As I was buying real estate at 22 and 23, I would take a tour around the house, but I don't know a hammer from a lug wrench, and I don't know, I'd be looking at plumbing, but it's like, yeah, those are pipes, looks like they're pipes, very good. But if you don't know that before you buy, whatever challenges you might encounter after, which I did, that's going to be a challenge, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, Tom, that's one thing we do when we purchase a property before, you know, all its closes, condition of inspection. You must have the place inspected. I mean, let's think about it. Your average investment property is, let's say, $300,000. Are you going to put $300,000 into something you don't know what it is?
Mm-hmm.
No. Our inspector, we have a really, really good inspector, and he says, he takes probably 3 or 4 hours to go through each one of our properties. We just closed on two last week, and he's the first one through. On the very first, like when we go to see the property, it's because we're there to inspect it.
Right. And one of the keys is don't inspect it yourself if you don't know plumbing or anything like that. Have a professional, pay the few $100, because it's better to find out and walk away and pay that guy a few $100 than to look at it yourself, not know what you're looking at, and go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I can't stress that enough, Tom. That's so correct. And the other thing, too, is even with new built houses these days, you've got to get these things inspected like 5 times.
You know, wow, even new ones?
Brand spanking new ones, especially, Tom. Absolutely. Think of this one. You're putting, say you build a $500,000 house. You want to make absolutely certain who's building that house is doing the job that they are hired to do. So you get your inspector. My inspector says they pour the foundation, you go and inspect it. They put up the framing, you go and inspect it. They have all the electrical and plumbing installed, it's inspected every way before they put the drywall up, too.
Wow. Wow. So you inspect it as it's being built, even?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes, for sure. Because you know, you want to make sure that they're doing all these jobs correctly before, like, say, the drywall goes on. You want to see what the wiring and the plumbing is like.
Right,
you want to make
right.
sure everything's perfect before that drywall goes up, right?
Exactly. Now, in your bio, it mentions positive cash flow. And this was one of my challenges. I'm a young guy. I'm creative, so I could, and I had a big network of real estate people, so I could find motivated vendors, and I could find creative ways of buying properties, and I would rationalize to myself and maybe other investors, well, this just has $150 a month negative cash flow. So after you deduct that from your taxes, it means this and that, and so really only after you deduct it from taxes, it's only this much negative cash flow. You
right.
should not buy any property if there's any negative cash flow going to happen, right?
Right, absolutely. And in fact, that's the way we invest. We won't buy it unless it'll cash flow. So, and that means, as you know, like after all the expenses are done, the debt is serviced and all that other good stuff, what's left? And it has to be a specific amount per door, minimum.
Per door. And even Raymond Aron would said in your calculations to include whatever vacancy rate is, in your city at that time in your calculations.
Yeah, we calculate 5% for vacancy at all times, whether that's the rate or not, okay? Because rarely were you going to get over 5% vacancy, especially in where we are. Okay, and then we do $50 a door for maintenance every month, and
mm-hmm.
plus 5% cash reserves, right? For those times when you know, oh my gosh, the furnace just blew. Oh, we got to get another one. Okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to get the money? Well, we have that in our reserve fund.
Wow, neat. And
right.
Do you have a property management company? Because I would get calls. Seems like appliances never break from 9 to 5. They always break on a weekend at 2 a.m. And I would get a phone call, and, like, I didn't know anything about these things. So do you manage that yourself because you're a handy person, or do you have someone do that for you?
Well, right now in our real estate career, Tom, we're going ahead and just going to manage them ourselves so that
mm-hmm.
we can learn how to do it, okay, so that we know once we've come to the point to hire a property manager that we know, a little bit about it, you know, and
yeah.
the goings-on, but there's all sorts of different little things to it as well, you know, with property management, collecting rents, all that stuff, you know, collecting rents, you know, doing repairs and all this sort of thing. And we're going to do that for, maybe a couple of more properties. And then after that,
yeah.
we're going to, find ourselves a property manager.
Exactly. And one thing I learned as well, I learned a lot of bad things, is that you should check out any potential tenant upside down, backwards, as much as you can. Do as much due diligence. I rented to some friends, dumb mistake, didn't check out references. I had tenants who did midnight moves. And so I have my real estate agent, who's the most successful real estate investor I ever met. He said he would rather have a property be empty for 2 or 3 more months till he found the exact right tenant.
Yes, very valid point. Our property over in Brantford, I'll tell you, Tom, we bought it with one tenant in a triplex. So two of them were empty already. And the one was kind of damaged. You know, there was, you know, some sort of issues there where damage got caused, let's say. And then the other one was vacated because of city regulations, let's say. This was actually quite a problem property in the first place, and that's why we bought it. But so what we did was we went in after it was, you know, we purchased it and whatnot, and we spent about 3 weeks getting it fixed up. And this was, about the 1st of November last year. And, we had ads on Kijiji and all that sort of stuff looking for tenants. And, of course, you know, you get a whole bunch of them showing up. And only maybe 2 or 3 of them actually took a rental application. And then and out of those, we found one or two that were okay. And it was funny because the upstairs apartment was, we had called this one lady, and she said, yes, I'd love the apartment and whatnot. And we said, okay, well, we just need to get back to you tomorrow to, you know, check a couple things out. Well, the next day we called and said, yeah, okay, we'd like to have you. It's no problem. She said, well, you know what? I've actually already rented an apartment. So now we still have this two-bedroom apartment not rented. And we go, okay, what's going on? Well, Chris says, well, you know what? The reason that this other lady didn't take it is simply because she wasn't supposed to, because it goes back to our belief of everything happens for a reason.
Right.
She said, the right one will come. And so maybe another day or so went by, and this lady that was living in Toronto phoned and said, you know, she'd like to have an apartment for her and her boyfriend who lives in Brantford. And said, fine, no problem. She seemed really nice, you know, on the phone and whatnot, so we decided that we'd meet them. And we met them, and you know, they filled out the application right there, and we were looking, you know, okay, yeah, I think this will work out, sort of thing. And so, you know, the next day comes along, and we decided, yep, we'd take them. And, you know, it turned out, when we went to sign the, we, you know, we told them about, you know, accepting them or whatnot. We went later that evening and signed the lease agreement. And what did you know? They turn around and gives us hugs. And right there, what? As soon as we, you know, they hugged us, we went, you know what, we made the right decision for sure.
Wow.
You know,
that's a great. That's a great story, because some of these tenants, they know the Landlord and Tenant Act better than the owner of the property,
yeah.
And at least in Canada or Ontario, it can take you like months and months and months to legally kick someone out who's in default, and if they know that better than you, you're kind of screwed.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you do have your avenues that you can take. And you're right, you know, they could take you for a ride for a few months, but they will eventually get out, and they will eventually never have to, not be able to get a job, because as soon as they get a job, and they'll get their wages garnished. So
nice. So you have to go to those lengths sometime, though, don't you?
You do, and I mean, it does happen, but it's not as bad as a lot of people would think, really, you know. And the other thing, too, that we do, Tom, is we have experts that take care of these things. One of our very good friends is a paralegal, and she specializes in Landlord-Tenant Act in Ontario.
Neat.
That's her specialty. So if we end up having a problem, we, you know, you stay calm, you know, and just, realize that this is happening for a reason. What is it?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We don't know, but let's, you know, do the best we can to rectify the situation.
Exactly. And my wife's a paralegal, and that's a cheaper alternative than getting a lawyer, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, you need the lawyer, and a lot of lawyers really don't want to bother with that either, you know.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, beyond their scope or whatever it is, I don't know. But generally speaking, the paralegal's the way to go. They're a little bit more pit bullish, if you will.
Yes.
You have to. So
exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I learned, Brad, as well, and probably it's one of the main secrets—not secrets, one of the best tips on negotiating you can give people is walk away if it doesn't make sense. Because again, here I'm young. I'm 22. I think I'm a hotshot because I, you know, negotiated people down, and you know, I'm pretty well taking everything that's not nailed down in the house. But again, even if there's $50 negative cash flow, or there's something you didn't check out, or there's a repair you think you're going to be able to do, one of the best things you could possibly do is walk away, even though you're tied up. You've tied up time and probably money into it at this point, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, you don't want to be, you know, the whole thing is, the way we work it is this. First of all, take all the emotion out of it, okay? Secondly, you do all the numbers. Do the numbers until they make sense. And if they don't make sense, don't even bother offering on the place. It's just a waste of time. But if your numbers are working good, you know, like, you know, you've got everything down and your, you know, return on investment is good and it's positive cash flow and whatnot, then you can kind of, you know, go from there. and be comfortable in knowing that. But no, if the deal's not looking good to you, it's not making sense for whatever reason, even if it's a positive cash flow, but it's not enough positive cash flow, then walk away. Because remember, don't wake up in the morning needing to buy real estate.
Yes, you're better to wait.
Right. There's lots of people that wake up in the morning needing to sell, right? So you
can
be motivated sellers, but there's no way you should be a motivated buyer. There's no way.
And Raymond Aron used to teach you even just buy two properties a year. And even if you have to look at 50 and put in 40 offers, just buy two a year. Like, don't go nuts.
Yeah, don't go too crazy. You know, I mean, there's lots of people, you know, that they just want to buy everything in sight. Well, you can't really do that unless you have a huge bank account that's, you know, endless. But we'd like to buy probably maybe two more properties this year, which would bring it to four for us this year. But you know, that's okay. We could probably handle four a year.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Exactly. And so just don't, like, be cautious and don't go for volume, go for quality. Now,
yeah.
Brad, one of the things that people may wonder, or I wonder sometimes, do you have any tips on finding these motivated vendors? Because a real estate agent isn't going to come out and tell you that they're a motivated vendor, and
yeah,
the property owner is not going to tell you they're a motivated vendor, but we know that they're out there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a network or some tips or ideas on how to find these properties?
Oh, sure. Well, what we do, Tom, is we have a buying real estate agent. So this gentleman is our buying agent, and I strongly recommend anybody that's going to be investing get one of these guys on your team.
Yeah,
you know, that's a big thing, because they are the ones that are going to go in between the seller and you.
Mm-hmm.
They're a real estate agent, right? And a lot of times the agents aren't necessarily. Oh, and the other tip I was going to give is make sure that your real estate investor or agent, your real estate agent also invests in real estate. This is very, very important. Why? Because the real estate agent, the regular one, doesn't know the same language as the real estate investor.
Right.
So you have to have a real estate agent that invests in real estate as well.
Isn't that so key? Because the guy I use, as I said, the best real estate investor I ever met, and he would present offers that, you know, even I was nervous and embarrassed to have presented. And yet some of them got accepted, and some of them, if you dealt with the listing agent, they would tell you, even though they legally have to present the offer, they would tell you, I'm not going to present that offer.
Yeah, I know. And you're right, they are legally obligated to, but you know what? Then they just lose the sale. They don't make the sale, and they're shooting themselves in the foot, you know. But another tip too, when you're working with a real estate agent / investor, is that you can go ahead. Like the last two properties we just bought was the result of 93 letters of intent being sent out, and what that meant is that the people we have an investors group and a couple in. Group sent out 93 letters of intent throughout, I think it was Waterloo Region. And one of the only ones that came back was the properties that we just bought.
What is a letter of intent? Go into that a bit more.
What that means, Tom, is instead of putting in an actual formal offer,
yeah,
what the letter of intent does gets the price taken care of. Because, you know, let's face it, you're buying real estate based on price, a good lot of
yep.
Right? So, you know, let's say you've got, you know, five different places that you want to buy, but you want to, you know, measure their interest or whatever, then you simply put in a letter of intent, which is just the price, right? So, you know, you want to put in a $200,000 offer, then you write your letter of intent. It just states basically that we would be interested in purchasing this property at this price. You know, should you have further interest, then please feel free to contact us, that sort of thing. And then they'll come back with either, you know, no, forget it, or
yeah,
oh, sure, like, we'd like to talk further.
Wow, so then you have a warm lead right from the start.
Yeah, and then what happened with this one is the gentleman needed to, he's been in almost 30 years into the real estate, landlord stuff, and he wants to retire. He's had enough. And so he was a little motivated to sell, and so we obliged him and bought his properties.
Wow, and right. That's so helpful.
Yeah, and it was three properties at once.
Wow, nice.
In the same fella, right? So what we did was we bought two of the properties, and the people that we work with, they bought the other one. But what we did was we had the three properties under contract and wholesaled them one.
That's what I used to do as well, because when I started, people would say, oh, you can't buy real estate, no money down. And then after a year or so, people would come to me and say, can you find us a property as well? And so, as I said, you could wholesale it, put the deal together, sell it to someone. I used to only charge $500. Here's a deal I put together.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you can make money without even having to take ownership of the property.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing, too, that's going to be a big thing in the future, just due to the economy and whatnot, is a thing called vendor take back. Have you heard of that?
I've done those lots of times. Yeah.
Have you? Okay.
Oh yeah. My one time I did a property, and my lawyer said, "Well, I never closed a property where I gave a check to the purchaser upon closing, because I would say buy it for $100, and I would have a vendor take back for $25 and $1,000, and I'd mortgage it for $80 and walk away with $5,000."
Yeah. That's all, right?
And so, it could be a great thing for the vendor as well, because if they don't need the cash necessarily right away, and you can give them somewhat of an interest rate that it's an investment for them, it could be a great idea for them.
Well, it's absolutely a great idea. I mean, think of this one. You've got your house mortgage-free. You want to downsize, but you still want to have cash because, you know, you have lots, let's say. It would be in your interest to sell it privately to somebody through a vendor take back, because then you're gonna defer your taxes, your capital gains, all that stuff, and you're gonna have a monthly cash flow every single month.
And you won't pay the real estate fee.
Right. And the banks are gonna give on your money, let's say they're feeling chipper that day and they give you 1%.
Okay? Yeah.
Well, you can use that money that you have already sitting there and make, say, like 8%, 10% on it.
Exactly.
Right? So what happens is the vendor then becomes the banker.
Exactly. And when I brought my first property from my own townhouse from my friend Shane Moran, the co-founder of Organo Gold, what he did is I gave him a good interest rate on a vendor take back. He sold that mortgage to a financial company because the interest rate was higher than the current rate the banks were offering, and, you know, he took a discount on it. But there's even that option for people with a vendor take back mortgage.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, you get it under contract and just go from there. But again, I highly stress, make sure you have lawyers and people that are looking out for your best interest. They're
always
important. Always, always, always.
Always. And another thing I learned from Shane Moran, and I guess Raymond Aaron taught it as well, but one time Shane bought a property and he went through the house and almost anything that wasn't nailed down, even in their shed, he got the lawnmower, he got the snow blowing machine, and he got everything, and he would put it in his offer, 25 things that are included with the property.
Well, oh, yeah.
Hey, maybe 20 get scratched out, but in the end, you get a free snowblower, you get a free lawnmower, you get this and this. And so don't think, well, I can't put that in there. Put them in and let them stroke it out.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it's also the same thing you were saying about being embarrassed about the offer. What we're taught is, if it doesn't embarrass you, you are leaving money on the table.
Good point.
Right? So like, you know, if you're going, well, you know, they want $500,000 for it. Gosh, you know, I want to offer them $495,000 because I don't want to offend them. Well, you know what? You just left, you know, right there is $5,000 on the table.
Yeah, exactly. And who knows what's going to offend them? They usually are listing it higher than they're going to settle for anyway.
Well, let me tell you a little story, Tom. There's a place, a property not too far from here, and me and my business partner had put an offer in on it. Now, the gentleman wanted $570,000 for this place, okay? And our numbers, you know, it's a nice place and everything, but our numbers said, you know what, it's not worth more than $313,000.
Whoa.
And that's with, you know, 10% cap rate, and we plus we appreciated the place 40% per year on top of that. And so we offered them $313,000 for something that's you know, listed at $570,000. But that's the way it is. Now, did that embarrass me? No, quite frankly, it didn't, because the numbers didn't work if we were going to pay him $570,000. Just didn't work.
All right.
We'd be in a negative cash flow situation. So just recently, the realtor for this fellow had emailed us back and said, well, we've just dropped our price, $70,000. So now they're down to $500,000.
Yeah.
Right?
And you keep telling them, call me when you get to my number.
Yeah. When you get a little closer to that, then we're good, you know.
So, yes.
Because we want to keep it open that we can either buy it ourselves or we can wholesale it to another investor.
Amazing. Now, Brad, when I build my webpage to promote this show, I'm going to put in ways for people to contact you, because there's lots of people who really could benefit from your help. Do you have a website, or what's the best way for people to contact you to say, listen, I want to buy a property too. If you find one of those three-in-ones or the wholesale ones, can I get in on one of them? How can they reach you? Because that's a valuable service in and of itself.
Oh, absolutely. Be happy to do that, too. Well, our website, Tom, is just under construction right now. So
okay.
We do have one up and coming. But, you know, they can happily either connect with me on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you have my Gmail address. You can have that up there. No problem. You also have my phone number.
I'm going to put all those in there because it would be so valuable to have you as kind of a mentor and a coach. Even if they didn't buy one of your wholesale properties, I think you're just the type of guy that would be able to give them a few pointers that in the end could save them a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of grief.
Well, yeah, more than happy to help, Tom. You know, that's kind of really why Chris and I are in this. I mean, you know, let's face it. Yes, we're in it for the money, of course. We're not in it for the good of our health. But our first thing is we love to help others. And one of our real loves today is this. We take person A, who has a need, and person B, who can help them out, and put them together. That, to us, is great.
Exactly. Well, thank you. And saving someone grief and helping them out is really very, very helpful. Brad, thank you so much for sharing all that today. I am going to make sure all your contact information is on all the pages I use to promote this show. And anybody who's in Canada, even in the U.S., please, come on. Some of those tips you gave are applicable in Canada as well as the U.S. I think the only difference between the two of our countries is a little bit of the mortgaging challenges. But all the other tips you gave apply equally well wherever you're investing in real estate.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Tom, you know what? It's been my absolute pleasure today to sit and speak with you for a while, and I really enjoyed myself.
I'm going to be watching for the new website, and anybody who even mentions that they're going to be investing in real estate, I'm going to point them your way.
Oh, thank you so much, Tom.
Have an amazing day.
No, and you too, and have an extra outstanding day.
Amazing. Take care.
Bye-bye now.